approve the minutes.
The hour of 10:15, having arrived, we'll call the House Tax Committee to order. We have four bills up today. We will start. We do not have a quorum, so we will start with the bills anyways here and move things as we get a quorum. Chairman Gunther has House File 487. I will move House File 487 when we have a quorum. And I see no amendments. We have a revenue notice there. So welcome to the committee, Mr. Chairman. And did you have Mrs. Shepherd here?
I haven't met her yet. She should, could be here and maybe not.
Is there a Mrs. Shepherd here? Okay. Please present your bill, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. House File 487 is a pretty simple bill. I think we have somebody from the Department of Revenue that might want to speak to it. They're going to haven't met that person yet either. But anyway, this is about animal shelters. And for some reason, when you go to an animal shelter and adopt a cat or a dog, you have to pay sales tax, even though it's a 501c3. Animal shelters do wonderful jobs. They pick up stray animals and remove nuisances from our streets or our communities. They are not allowed to make any money because they don't. But now they have to pay people that adopt animals have to pay taxes. It's pretty hard to get rid of a cat anyway from an animal shelter. Now we're going to charge sales tax, approximately 7% more. And they are subject to fines if they don't pay them. They all think they're tax-exempt organizations. Why should we have to pay taxes? But they do. And the Department of Revenue person called me and said that the governor, who also owns dogs and likes them very much, he and the Department of Revenue are going to allow to charge sales tax on Snickers. If they have a box of Snickers in their Humane Society or the Animal Shelter and they want to sell a Snicker, they got to charge sales tax on that Snicker. But nothing pertaining to the animal itself. Now, I kind of hope the guy would be here, but that's what he told me. And I think it's time that we eliminate this tax anyway, because why are we charging tax on puppies? You really think about it, the governor, he likes puppies. I like puppies. Most people do.
These are rescue.
But you take a veterinarian, takes a cat, gives us its shots, neuters it, cleans it up, gets it ready for adoption, and they got $70 in it. So the animal shelter typically, I've called quite a few of them, $75, $80. With that, they don't make much money, do they? After they charge sales tax. And this is the third time I had this bill up, and I hope this is the last. But I think it's time that we create animal shelters. They even charge sales tax in their fundraisers. Now, if I sold cakes and cookies at the fundraiser we have in Fairmont, you wouldn't have to charge sales tax in a grocery store, but you do in a fundraiser. So, members, I urge you to support House File 487 and pass it so we can take care of this inequity.
Okay. With that, we do have a quorum. I'll officially call me the House Tax Committee to order. Representative Schultz moves the minutes of February 1st, 2017. Any additions or corrections? Hearing none, all favors say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Schultz. Item next, I will move House File 487. We now have the bill before us. We've heard from the author. I would ask if there's any, before we go to member questions, is there anyone from the audience wish to testify on behalf of the bill? I just have a Mrs. Shepherd here. Is there anybody that has concerns on the bill? Okay. Well, why don't you come forward? And we will take your testimony, then we'll go to the department. Does the department have any thoughts on this one? They do? Okay.
Good
Welcome to the committee. If you could please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Thank you. My name is Elaine Hansen. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Pet Breeders Association and the Minnesota Council of Dog Clubs.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Representative Davids, committee members, Representative Gunther, the concerns that we have actually focus just on paragraph C, where the sale or adoption of animals by a shelter and the sale of associated supplies and equipment would be exempt from collecting and remitting sales taxes. This gives consumers an additional incentive to buy pets from sources that don't pay taxes on the proceeds of their sales or on real property. The sources have no responsibility to provide any history of the pet or any assurance of its suitability as a pet, since it's been randomly bred, and in most instances it's from an unknown source. The sellers of purpose-bred pets, however, produce taxable income, pay real property taxes, and collect and remit sales taxes on all of their pet sales. If there were to be an equitable measure, I believe it would be to exempt all pet sellers from collecting and remitting sales tax on the price of pets. In the alternative, we would propose that paragraph C be deleted, and that would leave the price of the sale of pets as taxable. When you count up the price of the pet and the probability that at least a first-time pet buyer is also going to stock up on equipment and supplies, beds, toys, travel crate, supply of food, the probability is that there's going to be at least a $100 to $200 additional expenditure beyond the price of the pet. And if we say the price of the pet is $400 and there's an additional $100 to $200, let's be conservative and call it $100, then using the approximate figure that the author did, 7% of that $400 or $500 it's in terms of the state budget and the resources that revenue collects from the taxpayers and on behalf of the taxpayers, that's a drop in the bucket. However, to a prospective pet owner, it certainly can provide an incentive to buy a pet that they might otherwise prefer, to not buy a pet that they might otherwise prefer simply because of the additional cost to them. And what it does, bottom line, is provide a market advantage to the nonprofit pet sellers. They certainly are doing well. The paper says that there's some 200 or more from some sources we identify 300 or more nonprofit pet sellers in Minnesota. There are approximately half that many persons registered as commercial breeders, licensed as commercial breeders with the Board of Animal Health. There are certainly a number of hobby breeders, small-scale breeders, who are not and do not need to be licensed in the state of Minnesota. To give nonprofits a distinct advantage over them simply seems inequitable, and I urge you to amend the bill to delete lines 2.2 and 2.3. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions for Mrs. Hansen? Okay, I think we'll go to the department, then I have a list of folks with questions. Or do you have a question for Ms. Hansen?
Yes, I was going to ask her
a question that I had one that I was going to ask the author before.
Chairman Carlson.
I might now, while she's at the table, and I'm just curious what other fees, whether you're nonprofit or profit, are attached when you purchase a pet. My son purchased a dog named Gary, and Gary's a cute little dog, but there were $200 and some in fees. I just remember he mentioned what the fees were, and I'm just curious what other expenses in addition to the sales tax may be attached to the purchase of a pet under either scenario, profit or nonprofit.
To my knowledge, I'm sorry, thank you. Representative Carlson, to my knowledge, the only additional expense would be whatever local fee is imposed for licensing the pet and any medical care. And I might add, by the way, that purpose-bred pet sellers have to provide a very extensive and detailed notice of consumer rights that includes the health and the source of the pet, the history of the pet. All pet sellers, profit and nonprofit, have to provide a health certificate for the pet after it's been examined by a veterinarian. And the for-profit pet sellers, regardless of whether they make a profit, are also obligated to assure the consumer that if the pet is found not fit for sale after its purchase, under certain circumstances, the pet seller is held liable for replacement of the pet, refund of the money, or reimbursement for veterinary expenses up to the cost of the pet. Which combination of those applies depends on certain circumstances. However, there is an ongoing obligation from purpose-bred pet sellers that is not imposed and does not offer the consumer any protection if they get it from a nonprofit pet seller.
Chair Carlson?
Yeah, Mr. Chair. You identified what some of the fees might be for, but typically what would be the cost then for a typical person coming in to purchase a dog by the time you pay licensure, by the time you pay health care costs and so on? And that's what I was after, what we're talking about there.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, I have seen estimates by sources such as the American Kennel Club, probably the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, and other such organizations that estimate the cost of first-year ownership of a pet to be somewhere between $500 and $1,500, depending on the choices made by the pet buyer in how luxurious the collar is, and so on. One other associated expense would be microchipping and registering the microchip for the pet. That's relatively minor. Almost all pet sellers do microchip the pets, and the registration fee varies from $15 to $25 to have that microchip registered in a database that will trace it to the buyer of the pet.
Okay, that's all. And by the way, it sounds like my son didn't pay an extraordinary amount. He did get a chip.
Good.
I remember him commenting about that, so thank you.
Okay. Any other questions for Ms. Hansen? Thank you very much, Ms. Hansen. We will now go to the department. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify with concerns from the public? Okay, we'll go to the department regarding the House file before us, House File 487.
Mr. Chair?
Yes? Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, Representative Gunther, and members. For the record, my name is Paul Cummings, and I'm the Tax Policy Manager at the Minnesota Department of Revenue.
Welcome to the committee.
I also brought Buddy, Mr. Chair.
Buddy.
I was able to connect with Representative Gunther before the hearing. Mr. Chair, if you remember, this is from the Conference Committee in 2014. We dealt with some issues related to the taxation of amnesty for animal shelters, and Buddy brought all of the committee members some acceptable language that would be that would make it work. So Buddy says his heart grew three sizes that day, and that's the effect of Representative Gunther, Mr. Chair.
Why, of course. In fact, I have mine right behind my desk in my office.
Oh, very good, very good.
It's Todd.
I wanted to address a few parts of our tax system this morning. We should look at purchases by nonprofits like this animal shelter bill, and then purchases by consumers from nonprofits. So let's start with purchases by nonprofits. It's commonly believed that if an organization is exempt from one tax type, it is exempt for all tax types. But in Minnesota, each tax type has a different standard to determine which organizations are exempt. Minnesota's income tax laws follow federal 501c3 laws, but Minnesota sales and use tax laws do not. The differences between federal and state laws add complexity and confusion for taxpayers. Minnesota law limits the exemption for purchases made by nonprofits to organizations operated exclusively for charitable, religious, and educational functions. However, federal law may also grant exempt status to 501c3 nonprofit organizations like animal shelters that engage in other purposes, including scientific, literary, testing for public safety, fostering national or international amateur sports competitions, and preventing cruelty to children or animals. That is why Governor Dayton and Lieutenant Governor Smith recommend expanding the sales tax exemption for purchases made by nonprofit charitable organizations to include sales to all federally recognized 501c3 organizations. Now, Mr. Chair, I'd like us to consider purchases made by consumers from nonprofits. So there has been wide agreement in the past, Mr. Chair, about the provisions relating to the sale of animals. As it relates to some of the provisions that deal with fundraising by nonprofits, I would just ask this committee to look broadly to ensure that as we're sort of updating the laws related to the fundraising events, that we look broadly in how that can be, how we can provide fairness for all of the nonprofits. We have many nonprofits in the state that provide worthy services to many Minnesotans, and providing equity and consistency to all nonprofits is important. If this bill moves through the process, Mr. Chair and Representative Gunther, we look forward to working with you and staff. And we would also look forward to ensuring that as we're looking at definitions and other events, that we can be as precise as possible as the draft moves forward, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Cummings. And before we go to questions from members, if you could stay with us here, Mr. Cummings, as a resource. Ms. Dalton, if this bill passed or signed into law as is, does it affect our streamlined sales tax at all?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, no.
Okay, thank you. And that's going to be my question on probably every bill today. Okay, so with that, we'll go to Chair Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And
these questions can go to the author or Mr. Cummings.
I guess more so it's just a common
lifeline here.
Okay.
And I grew up on a dairy farm. We never knew how many cats we had until milking time.
That's right.
And they just all came out of the wherever. And when I met my wife 45 years ago, she had a cat. And I said, we'd never have a cat in the house. She says, well, the cat was here before you. So we're on our fifth cat.
In the house, Chair Detmer?
Fifth cat in the house.
Okay.
And I don't even need an alarm clock anymore. The cat gets me up at 5:30 every morning. So, but we both decided this might be our last cat. So naming them, the first one was Tuffy, Ruffet, Stubby, Gonzo, and now we're on Tugger. So we enjoyed having cats. Thank you, Mr. Gunther.
Chair Carl.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, that woman's testimony, I forget her name, but she covered what I was going to ask about level playing field.
Okay, thank you, sir. Vice Chair McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I thought talking about the parades in our district were going to be fun. So when I was a boy, I had a dog.
Okay.
No, just tease it. Question for the author, Representative Gunther. Just a suggestion. See what you think about this idea. On line 2.2, it says the sale or adoption of an unwanted animal. Now, what beautiful cat or puppy is unwanted? Maybe you would be considering striking that the word unwanted and putting in a loved animal.
Unloved?
Loved. Beloved.
Yeah.
Kind.
That joke is a contest.
Well, highly regarded.
Why don't we work on that in conference?
So my legitimate question, Mr. Chair, and I think Mr. Cummings answered it, in regards to the nonprofit animal shelters, are they all under the guise of a 501c3?
Mr. Cummings?
So, Representative McDonald and Mr. Chair, nonprofit animal shelters, if they are nonprofit, then they would be under the jurisdiction of a 501c3 in most, if not all cases. But they are not under the definition of what would be a nonprofit related to the sales tax laws when they were discussing which types of organizations would be exempt. They had a different standard for sales tax laws created in the 1970s, I believe. So that is part of the inconsistencies that I was trying to bring up earlier. I think it was charitable, educational, or religious. Am I right? I'm looking at Ms. Dalton. And I wanted to just say, Mr. Chair, if we were going to move the language from unwanted to beloved, the department would ask, maybe that can be defined in the definitions section, Mr. Chair.
We will take that into consideration, Mr. Cummings.
Vice Chair McDonald. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Cummings, or should we say beloved? No, Mr. Cummings. Then, under current law, all 501c3s are sales tax exempt on the items that they raise and sell for fundraising if it's done for 5 days or less. So in Representative Gunther's bill, this would just increase that to 24 days. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, right now animal shelters do not qualify for the fundraising exemption for nonprofits because those nonprofits have to meet the definition of educational, charitable, or religious. And these don't meet the narrower definition for sales tax. However, what's in this bill mirrors the nonprofit sales tax exemption for those other types of nonprofits that is in current law. It does not expand it as it does in your bill for city celebrations.
Vice Chair McDonald.
Thank you, Ms. Dalton. Yes, we're working on another bill that for the last couple of years that would allow all, and Mr. Cummings is aware, 501c3s and 501c4s who have a fundraiser, such as the Lions Club and the animal shelters, to be sales tax exempt if they have a fundraiser 24 days or less. But wouldn't one consider that the act of an animal shelter being charitable since they're taking an unwanted animal?
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, I actually think maybe the best person to answer that would be a lawyer from the department.
Yeah.
On the how they are defining charitable for sales tax purposes.
Do we have a lawyer from the department? Just happen to have one?
And if the committee members, Mr. Chair, are open to that, they certainly don't have to take up the time just on my account.
Well, I'm looking forward to getting a less controversial bill down the road here, like the governor's tax budget proposal. But please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
My name is Margaret Reisdorf, and I'm an attorney for the Minnesota Department of Revenue, and I work in sales tax.
Welcome to the committee. To Vice Chair McDonald's question.
Right. So
do you
need
to repeat it?
No, okay. Chair and Vice Chair. So to answer your question, and this gets to the reason why this gets confusing for taxpayers, because we have a different standard in sales tax. The Supreme Court has ruled in a number of cases, most recently in a case that was decided, I believe, in 2007 under the Rainbow Child Care Center, that charitable, in order to be an organization that's considered charitable for purposes of the sales tax exemption, you have to not only have a benevolent purpose, but you have to substantially give away your services for free or for a greatly reduced price. And so that standard is quite exacting, and that's why we find that some charitable organizations with, you know, they're doing very good work in the state of Minnesota, qualify as exempt for other tax types, do not meet that standard for sales tax. Does that answer your question?
Vice Chair McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. That was very clear. I appreciate that. And then just lastly, and I'll end on this. Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the author, when a puppy or animal is sold, is sales tax added onto that, or do animal shelters include it in the sale of the animal?
Chair Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think they're added onto that at the end of the sale today. Hopefully tomorrow or July, June 30th, they won't have to.
Ms. Dalton, was that correct? Chair, of course. Why would I question Chair Gunther? That's crazy. Vice Chair McDonald.
Well, can you imagine a day, Minnesotans, that we will come to the end of taxing puppies and cats? Glorious it shall be, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. We'll wrap it up on that. So, Chairman, unless there's more questions, Chair Carlson.
Yeah, I was just going to mention I had a constituent that was the statewide chair of the animal control people. Typically, you might call them the dog catchers or whatever. And so he would come and see me periodically to introduce legislation dealing with dogs mainly, but pets. And one thing I can guarantee you is that if you introduce such legislation, you'll find half your constituents are for it and half are against it. Now, I never had to deal with the sales tax, and I can guarantee you you'll get a few newspaper articles around the state when you do that as well. I think I had three of them through the years that generated quite a bit of interest. He either moved out of the district or is no longer the chair, so I haven't heard from him lately. He was a very nice gentleman, however, but people watch what's happening with their pets. You know, I can guarantee that.
Representative Slocum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to correct something with the puppies and kitties. I was on that conference committee, and it was a doozy. It was. And the person whose heart needed to grow two sizes was our Commissioner Franz.
With that, I'll renew my motion to House File 4070 for possible inclusion in an omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Chair Gunther, Mr. Cummings, Ms. Hansen. Item next, I will move for Chair Gunther. If you want to stay right there, House File 504 provides a retroactive sales tax exemption for certain nonprofit retail development. And before Chair Gunther gets going, we have some folks who wish to testify on behalf of. Is there anyone who wish to testify with concerns on House File 504? Does the department wish to make comments on 504? Okay. So, Chair Gunther, to your bill, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. This is a bill about a town of 780 people, about?
Right.
That bucks the trend and wanted a grocery store and a hardware store and a liquor store and a gas station in their town. So they started to build a town center. The community raised over $800,000, and then they borrowed $2 million, and they built this in spite of the fact that the Star and Tribune said it's almost impossible to get a town with under 2,500 people to have somebody take over their existing grocery store. So this is something, a community that had foresight, and I go over there and I buy groceries there, and I know about prices because I was a grocer for years, and it is a wonderful place to go shop. And they did this because the town wanted to stay in existence. They didn't want to shrink. They wanted to grow. They had foresight, and according to the Star Tribune, this isn't done very often, and I don't think I can remember one other time that it's happened. So what they simply want to do is, when they were building this facility, this town center, 501c3, they were paying sales tax and everything they bought to build it, and then it came time to ask for a remittance of that sales tax. They were too late. I got it to the chairman too late. It was past time. He said, bring it next year, Gunther. So this is where we're at. We're trying to get the town center in Tremont, Minnesota, that's trying to make a small community alive again. You don't have to travel 50 miles to get a head of lettuce anymore when you're around Tremont, because you got one right there. Other than that, they have to travel round trip 50 miles to get a head of lettuce. So this is why we're here getting this, and I have Randy Grippy, the head of this project from Tremont, and he certainly lent a lot to the process.
Okay, please state your name. Who represents the record, please, sir?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm Randy Grippy, and I was the finance chair in raising $800,000 for the Town Center Incorporated, so I'm a member of the committee. Chairman, I can talk briefly about that, and I'll be glad to answer any of your questions. About 6 years ago, two business people were at the post office, and they were looking around, and they just said, we need to bring some essential services back to the city of Tremont. And they came up with this idea of a private partnership along with a public partnership, and they developed the town center model. We secured a USDA loan for $2 million. They named me chairman of the committee. You have a flyer that is going around that gives us a little bit of information on what we're doing. And the USDA loan, as I said, was $2 million. We raised the $800,000 in 2 years. And on November 18th of 2015, we opened the grocery store and the fuel site. In February, we opened the hardware store and the liquor store, and we're up and running to date. Our general contractor at that time, I don't know if it was communication or what it was, but we had sales tax that was paid on equipment and those types of services that totaled just under $69,000, and we're asking for relief for that at this time. We have secured a Super Value grocery store, a municipal liquor store, an Ace Hardware, and a fuel site from Duncan Oil. Duncan Oil and the Super Value grocery store are in partnership, so once in a while when you see a Super Value in a smaller town of population of under 2,500, they are in that as a partnership. It's Duncan Oil from LaGrange, Indiana, and it's Super Value out of the Twin Cities. Very successful to date. We employ about 20 to 24 people, depending on the season. It's brought great economic benefits, revitalized our town, and people in western Martin County, eastern Jackson County, and southern Watonon County. We did two feasibility studies that reached out about 12 and a half to 15 miles, and we're happy to say that we've reached further than that. We're going about an average of 15, 16 miles on when we take the circumferences where we're at, the radius of where we're at, of members that come in and shop with us. And we're just very pleased as to how it's going. We've been contacted by others to be used as a model or a template for rural areas. We were considered a grocery desert, and Mr. Gunther was right in that it is 50 miles round trip, or it was. It's not anymore, and that's our story. We have a website you can go on and talk about or read about our whole story. It's kind of exciting, and it's a great place to visit and be. I was I'm a retired superintendent of schools of Martin County West Schools, raised my family there, and when they asked me to do the fundraising, I decided that's the way I'm going to give back. So I, 2 weeks ago, I was named chairman of the town center board because the fundraising is probably 95% complete. We continue to get, as a 501c3, continue to get people, but the $800,000 was raised. It was $600,000 to break ground, another $200,000 to get started with USDA loan, and that's been completed. But we're probably approaching $850,000 raised locally, businesses, private entities. My last name is Groupie, a company named Groupie Company in California saw us on the website, sent us $500. I said, if your last name is the same as mine, it's a pretty unique name that must be worth $500, and they sent us a check. So, if you are interested, I have a form, so you can fill that out too. But that's our story, and we appreciate your time here today, and I'll answer any questions that you have.
Well, thanks for being here. So you're one of the groupies. Are there any roadies in town?
Wendell.
Wendell Roadie?
Yeah.
Roadies and groupies, kind of like hanging around this place.
Yes.
Okay. So wasn't that the Trimont Orioles?
It was.
And now it's the Martin County West Mavericks. But who came in with Trimont to make Martin County West?
Welcome and Sherburn. And Sherburn is a little town, Donnell, to the southwest. Mm-hmm. Sherburn and Donnell went together back in 1970 when the last state championship in boys basketball and all the classes were together.
Yeah.
It was Sherburn.
Sherburn.
Yes, and Martin County West was there in 98 and 2004.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Thank you.
That's been a while, though, 2004. Got to work on that.
Okay, we will.
Okay. Okay, so Trimont, okay, so I think we know what the bill does here, and there's no one else going to testify on behalf of or with concerns. The department doesn't wish to testify this time. Any questions for members? Vice Chair McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question to Mr. Groupie. Because it's a 501c3, the whole development, is that then not, are you not subject to property tax then?
No, we do pay for
that. Groupie.
Mr. Chair and Vice Chair, we do pay property taxes. We have abatement from the county and from the city on about half of them. But our plan is to pay. We could have checked the box that we did not have to. As I understand it, I was not a member of our original association, and we would not have had to, but we wanted to because the community at our meetings and that had asked that we would contribute, and so we are. And we just received their tax statement the other day. We'll be paying $45,000 this year towards with the property taxes.
Vice Chair McDonald?
Yeah, that's, thank you, Mr. Chair. No, that's a good,
but we aren't completely off of that tax roll, no.
Sure.
We are on the tax rule.
It just shows when a group of residents come. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry. It just shows to go when a group of residents come together for the greater good of the community to provide something that's very necessary, and they were willing to pay, spend taxpayer dollars on such an event that now going forward, it brings great income to the school and to the county and to the city. So for that reason, it seems like a worthy cause to support this bill, Representative Gunter. We've got to be careful for the precedent that we set forth, but I don't think there's probably many cities that are able to pull together like yours to create such a town center. And if they can, then more power to the people of Minnesota.
Vice Chair, that would be exactly right. Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, that is exactly right. The people that have called and asked if we could use you for a model or if you would be willing to come and speak as and use your template, exactly right. We did about, with the $800,000 raised, with about 800 people in town. It obviously went wider than that, but that's where they have run into their a little bit of concern. If they have 1,000 people, I said you might have to raise $1 million locally, and that's where they have had a little hesitancy. So we're working through that with some of those other cities that are interested, but the process and the results, they like them. We've got a lot of visitors. We've had buses that have stopped by and looked at our, and if you're ever on Highway 4 South, going through Tremont, we're half a mile south of town, on the east side of the road, stop in.
Vice Chair McDonald.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, the refund, who will that go to then?
That'll go to the general contractor.
Mr. Groupie?
You get the hang of it.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Mr. Vice Chair. That'll go to the general contractor. He paid those dollars.
Vice Chair McDonald.
That is all. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Loffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just trying to understand sort of the nonprofit structure here. And is it the nonprofit structure is the landlord and owns the buildings and then leases out spaces to a for-profit Super Value and a for-profit hardware store? Is that kind of how it works?
Mr.
I'm just trying to understand how the businesses and the nonprofit work together.
Mr. Groupie.
Mr. Chair and the members of the committee, that is accurate. And like the Ace Hardware, they pay a substantial fee for a rental. We have built a building that hopefully will be able to be expanded upon. We are looking right now at a telepharmacy. There's a telepharmacy in Adrian that we went and visited. And Adrian is between Fairmont and Jackson. And then over to Worthington, it's off the Highway 90 there. And that's what we'd like to do is exact that, and that would be another rental bay. We call them bays, and then we would rent that out. The Super Value and the liquor store and the fuel site are under the 501c3, and they are under Town Center Incorporated themselves. As we add the others, which we have at the Ace Hardware, and that they are rental bays. And we're looking for another rental bay to hopefully do a telepharmacy so that people don't have to go to these other communities to get their pharmacy.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and with all the nonprofit developers that we have doing all kinds of different developments across the state, I think we have to kind of think about how narrowly we write this. This is written really narrowly to, I think, just apply to this. I'll also say that there are food deserts all throughout Minnesota, and I know that there's plans right now in North Minneapolis for a nonprofit to expand its mission to try and see if it can run a grocery store. I don't think it's going to be a rental like this model. And I also know there's a cooperative effort to have a natural foods co-op in addressing another area. So I think this may not be as rare as we might think, because sometimes that's the only way to address those kind of issues. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Loffler. Any other questions for the witness? Representative Gunther, you want to wrap it up?
Members, I appreciate your vote. I think as the contractor is looking forward to getting his money, I think it would be a good gesture to pass this bill so we can get the money rolling.
Yeah, we'll renew my motion at House File, the 504, be laid over for possible inclusion in an awesome omnibus tax bill. Item next, Representative Anderson P. Thank you, Mr. Groupie.
Thank you.
And thank you, Chair Gunther. Mm-hmm.
And welcome to the committee, Representative Anderson P. I will move House File 532 so that it is before us. If you could please present your bill, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks, Mr. Chair and members. And before I start, I'd just like to say that it was interesting sitting here to hear the definition of a charitable organization being one that sells products for a reduced price. I'm going to check and get my farm turned to a charitable organization the way things are on the farm scene right now.
And not anyway, profit.
Not profit. Yeah. Greatly reduced prices. Members, good morning. I'm here on behalf of the city of Melrose, which is about 35 miles west of St. Cloud along I-94. Last fall on September 8th, they had a devastating fire on their main street in town. Nearly took out an entire block of the heart of their downtown city. And were it not for some great work by the Melrose firemen and their mutual aid folks, they did save some of the buildings, but a lot of damage, some buildings totally destroyed. And as I'm sure you probably know, working with Medili, it's really difficult to rebuild in a small town. And they want to put their town back together again, and they need some help from the state to do that. And that's why we're here today, Mr. Chair. And with me is the Melrose City Administrator, Michael Bredhorst, and he's going to talk about what this bill could do for the city of Melrose.
Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Mike Bredhorst. I'm the city administrator for the city of Melrose.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. I'd just like to begin by saying that I'm here today to ask for help for in the recovery efforts for a devastating fire that ravaged our downtown, as Representative Anderson said, on September 8th. We come to call this fire a 400-block fire, and as the fire marshal, as per the fire marshal, the cause of this fire is still undetermined, but not suspicious. So, but today I represent the city of Melrose as their administrator. I also have with me our community development director, Mike Creelman, who is in the back here. He has been with us for just 6 months, and so he came here about 2 months into this, and now he's here today. So. But today we're attempting to gather resources to aid our community to rebuild and restore the businesses and homes that were lost by this fire. Now, we're a very proud community, and we're working hard to recover from this fire. And it's very hard for me to say this, but we can't do it alone. And as I mentioned, the fire ravaged our downtown. This fire displaced 11 businesses. This represents 23% of our downtown businesses. The fire also destroyed 9 homes for families. This represents 33% of our homes in our downtown. And these homes would be considered workforce housing. Now, the city of Melrose has requested help from the University of Minnesota to help us truly understand how this impacts us economically. And so they helped us through developing an impact assessment. Now, they assess that this fire, if none of the businesses or none of the families were to return or to relocate to Melrose, this would translate, and I'm not, this is as per the numbers, as per the University of Minnesota, $5.7 million economic loss to our community of Melrose, including $1.8 million in lost labor income annually for the 33 jobs and 33 people that were actually lost. Now, when you compare this to the city of Melrose's general fund, that's $2.4 million. That's our general fund compared to this economic loss to this community. So when I say devastating, it's truly a devastating fire. The estimated reconstruction cost to rebuild the 400 block, the properties that were destroyed by fire, for a one-for-one replacement is estimated at $2.3 million. Now, the pre-fire annual taxes paid that were destroyed by the fire were about $12,800 annually. That's what they paid in property taxes. To rebuild on-site, it's estimated, as per the Stearns County Assessor, the new estimated market value would only be $1.4 million. So from your construction costs of $2.3 million to estimated market value of $1.4 million, they have a gap from construction costs to estimated market value of $900,000. So it's just really drives home the fact that it's hard, extremely hard, to finance construction projects in greater Minnesota when you have that type of economic loss. As I mentioned, the pre-taxes paid, it's estimated the new taxes on this estimated $2.3 million bill would be $53,000. So these businesses go from paying $12,000 a year, roughly, to roughly $53,000 a year. So that's a $39,000 rough increase in property taxes to basically get what they had for from before. Now, this is only cost for construction. Now, there's also demolition costs that we're just finishing up today. It's taken us nearly 6 full months to deconflict the requirements to remove the debris for these homes and these businesses, as working through the MPCA, the Department of Health. It's taken us 6 months to deconflict all these requirements. And so we've asked Chad Mittendorf, who's the primary property owner, who couldn't be here today because he's a tax accountant, and it's tax season right now, so he's actively doing that. So he's asked me to provide you a very short statement on his behalf. With this astronomical cost for debris removal and demolition, even with his insurance that he did have, there's no way to buy enough insurance to cover all the state regulations and the disposal of all these old buildings and materials. Add to the high cost to rebuild in rural Minnesota, it's necessary to try to lower the cost wherever possible. Without relief from such costs, it's difficult for him to rebuild or anybody to rebuild in rural Minnesota. Now, our community is committed to restoring our downtown. We have pledged support to do so, and we will rebuild after this horrific fire. But we also have businesses that are also committed to returning to the 400 blocks once it's restored and safe again. And we are strong people, but sometimes even strong people need help. I do ask that you indulge me for one more minute, and then I'll turn it over to you. But I would like to share one last story about Melrose here. This past March, we had another horrific fire that made statewide news, you probably heard. This fire destroyed the interior of our 1898 Romanesque Revival architecturally designed Catholic Church, which is on the National Historic Registration. The cause of this fire, as per determined by the state fire marshal, is determined to be arson. The estimated cost to restore our church is over $8 million. If you read our local paper and our editorials, our community is committed to restoring and rebuilding our great community. We're not here to ask for assistance for efforts to recover our church, but it does bring to light the burden our community is experiencing, the tragedies that we have seen in the past year, which sets us apart. Now, in conclusion, we're here to ask for help today. We are in a unique situation that is great, and that is so great that we're sitting before you here today. And we do this very deliberately to ask for your help. By passing this disaster package relief, it is helping us recover and rebuild and bring our community back stronger and more vibrant than before. So I thank you for listening to us and hearing our story.
Okay, thank you, sir. And we will see if members have questions of the City Administrator Melrose. Is there anyone else wish to testify on behalf of this bill that we have in the audience or with concerns? Does the department have comments on this? No? Okay. Okay, so questions of the witness. Chair Carlson.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Chairman, if you want to hold them to the witness, I think I have a question maybe of the staff, but I can wait.
Okay, let's go to the witness. You're first on the list. Okay. Questions of the witness. Seems like if there wasn't bad luck, Melrose wouldn't have any luck at all lately. It's a great concern. You said that, or somebody said, maybe Chair Anderson, that you had talked some to the folks from Adelia?
Yes, we have. We've spoken very closely with the city administrator in Adelia, as well as their staff there. And we feel that this package is very similar to what they've done. So we've learned some great lessons from them, some very hard taught lessons from Adelia. Yes.
Okay. Well, thank you. Chair Markford.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And good to see you, Mr. Bredhorst. Mr. Bredhorst was the city manager in Barnesville district I represent, did an excellent job there. So it's good to see you. I wish it was under better circumstances. But when I drive back and forth from Dilworth, coming down always on Sunday night, that's my stop. A little over halfway, exit 135 in Melrose. And so I've kind of seen that. And one point you had made, you talked about the property taxes going from like 13,000 to 50 some thousand or something like that. Is that because of what the new market value would be after the?
Yes, okay. Mr. Bradhorst?
Yes, Mr. Chair. The numbers that we have, we base that on our total estimated construction cost of $2.3 million to rebuild a one-for-one structure, which includes a restaurant, a grocery, a bar, multi-family, build, meeting the standards. And so based on that, the estimated market value goes down to about $1.4 million, and then based on our tax capacity and tax rates for Stearns County, Melrose, it's equals $53,500 in property tax that this building would have to pay. Yeah.
Chair Markler?
Yeah, thank you. And, you know, that's one thing in rural Minnesota, not just businesses but homes, but a lot of times you can't build them. The materials and everything cost stays the same no matter where you build, but the market value is only so much. So that's one reason we have problems with affordable housing, and that is, you know, here David's in a lot of these communities. So, you know, another question, too, you have the city of Madera, and they're asking for sales tax exemptions, which are not huge money items, quite frankly. I mean, this bill's, what, $150,000 overall. I mean, it can make a big impact there, but in the whole scheme of things down here, it's not huge. And, you know, I know we've looked at some things with disaster funding and so forth. I mean, I'm wondering if we couldn't just have some sort of a pot of money. It wouldn't have to be that much, but it would take care of some of these cases where you've got downtowns that burn down, and it really creates, as Mr. Bradhorst and Representative Anderson has said, some big, huge problems for various smaller cities. I don't know if that's a possibility in the end. But so thank you for bringing this forward. And I'm going to ask Mr. Chair, do you know who the basketball star from Melrose was when they won the state championship back in like 1973, I think it was?
Chair Markler was Mark Overding.
Thank you very much.
I believe the forward was Butch Manning.
Yes.
Wasn't Butch Manning on that team? The Melrose, Dutch, not the flying, the Dutchman, the Flying Dutchman or Edgerton, I think, right?
Yeah.
You're just Dutch. I mean, just Dutch. now, my grandfather's name when he came from Holland was Vrugendewey, and I'm so thankful at Ellis Island they changed to David's, which is Welsh, and we're not Welsh at all. Can you imagine a vote for Representative Vrugendewey when I was teaching seventh graders? So I always said, if you ain't Dutch, you ain't much, but that's just what I say.
There you go.
Chair Marquardt. To your point, Chair Marquardt, Chair Pawlowski worked very, very hard on a flood disaster relief fund. So every time there's a flood, you didn't have to have a special session of legislature come back. So maybe thinking down the road here, something like that for devastating fires for our communities type of thing. Just a thought.
Well, Mr. Chair, I agree. I think Chapter 12A or something. Yeah, right. I'm wondering if there isn't some way in which we could possibly work into that work that Representative Pawlowski did. Might be. So, you could... You wouldn't have to kind of go through all of this all the time, but maybe this is the best way to do it.
And one may say, well, you should have had insurance on the buildings. Well, that's not really the issue. You probably did, but the issue is now the value of that building that is rebuilt is so much higher that that's where we're getting hit. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Markler. Questions of the City Administrator, Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I guess Representative Marquardt kind of went where I was going, that we have this disaster relief fund. Maybe you could say that in an attempt to put the fire out, all of the hoses flooded the village. So you got flood relief, right?
That's already covered. Right. Okay, so any other questions for the administrator? Okay, thank you very much. Now we will go to the bill itself. House File 532, Chair Carlson.
Mr. Chair, part of my question was answered when Medelia was referenced. I was going to ask how this compared to what was being done for Medelia. But I was trying to remember as a second part of that question, and I don't think it went through the tax side. I was chairing finance at the time, and we had a fire in St. Charles, Minnesota that destroyed a meatpacking plant that was the largest employer in St. Charles. And we had to provide some relief there as well. That would have been in Representative Drazkowski's district, and I worked with him at the time. But I think we handled that one through the appropriations side of it. It's been a few years.
That was St. Charles's. It was a packing plant for vegetables or corn or peas or something. It was a packing plant. Yeah,
I'm sorry. Large employer relative to the size of the town. It's about... I was a teacher there many years ago. Don't ask me what the...
What year was that?
early 60s, so don't ask me what the mascot was or whatever. It's so long since I've been there.
St. Charles.
But when Truskowski came in and was interested in getting some help, I think I kind of surprised him. I said, well, I'm very familiar with the community. I used to teach there. And but at any rate, I think we handled that with an appropriation, but I'm not sure. You know, you deal with so many issues over time. But
I think they had a sales tax.
My point is that it's not unique that we try to help smaller communities that have run into some difficulty as a result of an unexpected event like a fire. And maybe that's not a bad idea, Mr. Chairman, yeah, to look at the Pulaski model, to have a fund set up, because some of these events aren't going to take place while we're in session. I think that was part of the flood relief idea, so that we wouldn't have to have a special session. And you had St. Peter, which of course was not fire, but it was tornado. But we were fortunately, if I recall, in session when it hit Gustavus College and part of downtown St. Peter, and we had to act pretty quickly.
And Chair Carlson, I think we had that with North Minneapolis too, a tornado a couple years ago.
Mr. Chair, your memory is correct on the tornado that came through North Minneapolis 5 years ago, maybe longer. I can't place it longer, according to Mr. Michaels, if he's right. But there also was a devastating fire in that same neighborhood that probably is facing many of the same issues here. Right along Broadway, which is the main thoroughfare through North Minneapolis, there was a fire that took out a significant retail stretch of retail, and I drove down there on Saturday, and most of it is still what isn't bulldozed is boarded up, and I would suspect that the owners, again, the insurance may cover the cost of the previous building, but the rebuilding is going to yield much higher values and much higher property taxes for the owners then. So this certainly is a challenge in small towns, but it's no different in our larger cities.
Chair Dabney, how long ago was the fire in North Minneapolis?
I'll say maybe 3 years ago, but Mr. Michael might want to correct me. It was about that, because I remember it came back to mind when this bill was before us last year, 2 years ago.
With Medelia?
Well, was it Medelia that came forward with the same problem?
This just happened in September.
In September.
September of 16.
Last year, yeah.
Right, okay. Sure.
Medelia was the year before.
Yeah.
But there's been several incidents of significant fires in business areas around the state that then are hard to rebuild for all the same reasons.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Chair Anderson, on page 4, line 4.16, do we have any idea what you're looking at as a possible appropriation?
Mr. Chair, we left that blank for the time being. There was also some street additions because of the fire and rebuilding, that they may need help with a street project. Then we talked about the tax abatement, which could also be used there, but I'd say between a half and $1 million would be what they would be looking at for that general appropriation.
Well, this is we will continue to take a look at this. So, Representative Grunhagen, then we'll go to the next bill. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment for the committee to think about is that, you know, is there a rationale for suspending some of the state rules and regulations in the bill that are artificially inflating the cost of rebuilding when a disaster like this hits a small community on a temporary basis? And I just asked the author of the bill that to consider putting some provisions in there that would temporarily suspend some of the regulations and actually reduce the cost of rebuilding. Where this comes from is prior to Chairman Greg Davis being born, I read an article. I'm just kidding.
A long time ago.
That was a long time ago, yeah. A number of years ago I read an article, and it happened to be about California in the Los Angeles area, where they had suffered an earthquake. And they predicted it was going to take like 10, 12, or 15 years to fix the roads and rebuild things. While they suspended the regulations, and I think the complete repairs were done within 6 to 8 months. So what was projected to take years and years and years and cost multiple billions of dollars was done in a relatively short period of time because they suspended temporarily some of the regulations and permitting process to complete the repair. Just a suggestion to consider.
And thank you, Mr. Grunhagen. I would say to those comments that if you're looking at that, you may want to spend some time with a few other committees. Okay. Any other questions for the author of the bill? Okay, I'll renew my motion that House File 532 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. And I'd really like to thank the witness for his testimony. That was certainly very devastating for Melrose. So thank you, Chair Anderson, for the bill.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, by the way, I played against Mark Oberding back in the day. I was a senior. He was a freshman. It was like men playing against boys. He was just a tremendous player. He was from Melrose, and I played for the Starbuck Bucks.
Starbuck Bucks.
Yep.
Who won that game?
They did.
What was the score?
It was in the regional tournament. I don't recall. They beat us pretty good.
Pretty good.
Thanks for asking.
Played for the San Antonio Spurs?
Yes.
Yeah.
For a while?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's Mr. Manning doing now? Is he playing the Super Bowl? No.
I'm not sure.
No Super Bowls? Or is he in town yet? Or
no. No. Okay. We do know that the Oberding family, we've still got a number of Oberding family members that still live in the community. One of them is our librarian, so it's wonderful, and an insurance agent at Dow.
I remember I compared him to Como Pontliano for Duluth East in the 69th state championship, who was quite a ball player. So, and Randy Brewer and whatever. Okay. Okay, so with that, thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, members.
Okay, item next, I will move House File 579. This is a David's bill, and I have a couple of witnesses. Mr. Layton, if you could come down and bring your folks. Just to kind of see where we're at, we have Mr. Layton on the bill, wants to testify on behalf of the bill. Is there anyone who wishes to testify against this bill? Does the department have some thoughts?
Okay.
Not at this time. Okay, thank you. Okay, Mr. Layton, welcome to the Tax Committee. Now, why don't we do this first? Why don't we have Ms. Dalton describe the bill, and then we'll take testimony and questions from members. Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, as many of you know, back in 2013, the state began taxing digital goods. And when we added digital goods to the definition of taxable retail sales, it was limited to digital goods used by end users, and we don't have a definition of end users in our current statute. However, Streamlined Sales and Use Tax Board actually developed a rule for what end users are. We are a member of Streamlined Sales and Use Tax, and so what this bill does is it adds in the definition that was developed by the Governing Board for Streamlined Sales Tax, and basically the practical effect of it is it clarifies that a jukebox owner who is purchasing digital music as a download and then exhibiting it by letting somebody play the music on the jukebox is not an end user and therefore is not subject to the sales tax on their purchase.
Okay, let's back up 1 second. On the two previous bills, neither of those have anything to do with streamlined sales tax, would they, Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, no, they didn't.
Okay, thank you. Okay, back to the House File 579. Please state your name and who represents for the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rob Layton with the law firm of Nolan Thompson Layton. I represent the Minnesota Operators of Music and Amusements, and we appreciate your authoring this bill to address a very, very narrow issue. And I'll be very brief and then turn things over to Chip O'Hara to explain why we feel this bill is needed. Vice Chair McDonald has a bill, House File 349, that was heard by your committee on January 24th. That bill is a much broader bill that talks about exempting all digital products from the sales tax. That would include music and e-cards and artwork and e-books. And the committee had a fairly lengthy discussion about that bill and the interplay between brick-and-mortar businesses and online businesses. And there's policy arguments there. I just put that in context that this bill is a very narrow bill that addresses a tax fairness issue. It does not have a distinction between brick-and-mortar businesses and online. In fact, it's going to benefit both if this were to become law. This bill that you're hearing, that's authored by Chairman Davids, is a narrow bill that specifically addresses digital music downloads into jukeboxes, and it does not impact all the other digital downloads that Representative McDonald's bill does. This is really a question of tax fairness. The operators of the jukeboxes currently pay the full sales tax on every dollar that goes into the jukebox. That's fine. That's fair. We're still going to pay that under this bill. The issue is, out of every dollar that goes into a jukebox, the operators also have to pay 20 cents to a company like TouchTunes that provides the digital download. If they have to pay a sales tax on that 20 cents, what in essence it means is that they're paying a sales tax on $1.20 for the dollar they collect. That's the problem. So from our view, it's a question of double taxation, and Representative Davids felt that this made sense to move forward to try to address this issue. And the last point I'll make is that other states are looking at this, and I know that the state of Wisconsin addressed this legislatively a year ago to fix it. I know Ohio's looking at it and some other states because other people have thought that wasn't fair. At that point, I'll just turn it over to Chip O'Hara.
And thank you, Mr. Layton, for the description there, because what we're looking at here, like you said, is you pay the sales tax on the dollar, which you're not requesting anything there, but then that 20 cents that is part of the dollar that you already paid sales tax on, you get to pay on it again.
Right.
And so you just need some clarification so that you're paying on the dollar that you should be paying on. Mr. O'Hara, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
My name is Chip O'Hara. I'm from Midwest Coin Concepts. We're based in St. Cloud, Minnesota. Mr. Chairman, committee members, thank you for letting me speak today on behalf of House File 579. I've been involved with the video game arcade business and jukebox business in Minnesota for 42 years. I'm a member of the Minnesota Operators of Music and Amusements, MOMA, which is an organization that represents small businesses which operate video games, jukeboxes found in bars, restaurants across the state. To briefly summarize, and some of this may be a little redundant, the issue we'd like to address through legislation this session in House File 579 is our members currently pay sales tax on every dollar that goes into the jukebox. In addition, our members pay TouchTunes or similar companies 20 cents on every dollar for providing digital music downloads into that jukebox. The jukebox itself is just a shell and contains no music, unlike 45 and CD jukeboxes that you may have seen in years past. Only when a customer puts a dollar in and selects a song does the music get downloaded into the jukebox. Based on information we received over the course of the past year, we've been visiting with the Department of Revenue. They seem to be indicating that our members should not only pay the sales tax on every dollar going into the jukebox, the way the law is written, but that we also should pay an additional sales tax on the 20 cents that TouchTunes or like companies are charging us. TouchTunes, we contend that our members are facing double taxation. They will effectively be forced to pay sales tax on $1.20 for every dollar that is collected from the jukebox. And we don't believe this is fair. We're pleased that the House Tax Committee Chairman Davids agrees to author this bill, and thank you for letting me testify at today's hearing. I'd be happy to answer any questions that the members may have.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. O'Hara. Any questions for Mr. O'Hara or Mr. Layton or the author? Vice Chair McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Would this be similar practice that the state already has when a business such as a restaurant or other business, I'm going to use my example, the photography, where our items that we purchase for resale are tax exempt. So could this be considered to be a practice very similar to that, whereas a jukebox restaurant turnier is purchasing the music and selling it back to the customer through an audio stimulation, similar to that of the touch, taste, feel?
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald's actually, McDonald, that is actually what kind of led to the current stand of the Department of Revenue. Yes, this is very similar to a sale for resale. However, what the department has found is under federal copyright law, this can't be considered a sale for resale. And so there is essentially a disconnect between what copyright law says these people are doing versus what our department can allow for a sale for resale, because they're saying copyright law doesn't make this a sale, doesn't allow a sale for resale under this. And so by clarifying end user, we're going kind of around it, but the effect is the same.
Vice Chairman Dunn.
Thank you, Ms. Dalton. Very interesting, especially with copyright issues. I'm familiar with those. And then last question to the testifiers. Oftentimes nowadays with modern technology, individual in a business, a bar or restaurant, can play through the jukebox their own music through the phone. Is that something that is of your concern, or do you offer those equipment that allows that?
Mr. O'Hara?
And how is that taxed?
Mr. Chairman, Representative McDonald, are you speaking to the mobile app for TouchTunes?
Yes.
Mr. McDonald?
Yes, I am.
Mr. O'Hara?
Mr. McDonald, yes, there's an app for that, and that revenue is fully taxed. There's an audit screen on the jukebox where when we come in to collect monies, we hit the audit screen. It shows a mobile play, credit card play, cash play, and then the total, and that amount is taxed. So, there is that. That's widely used across the state.
Vice Chairman Gunn.
So then, Mr. Chair, thank you. So that would be a double tax as well from the user who downloaded the music or app from their phone, a digital download, which is taxed. So again, there portrays evidence of another double taxation. Is that correct, or am I wrong?
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, what's going on there is you do not, when you purchase something from like iTunes or some other music online provider of music, and you pay sales tax at that point. However, you have not purchased a contract to exhibit or distribute or transmit that. You've just purchased a contract for personal use. And so this gets into some really gray areas that, you know, related to what are your rights once you actually personally download this that I am not qualified to talk about, but there is a difference. The jukebox owners actually are purchasing this music with a contract to exhibit or distribute this music. When you purchase it, you are not purchasing that contract.
I can't wait until we get to my bill that I'm carrying for the governor on tax issues. That'll be much easier. Vice Chair McDonald.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, with that, any other questions for members? I think we kind of get what's going on here. Okay, with that, I will move House File 579 be later for possible inclusion in an omnibus tax bill. I do have one question, though, for maybe Mr. Layton or the witness, if I could talk to you maybe offline. I got a call from a constituent last night. He owns a bar/restaurant where they have stream music, and he subscribes to a service called BMI. And now there's some other services that are coming after him and say, well, if a band is in your facility, plays a song that's not covered by BMI, that they're going to sue him, and they did a cease and desist and he can't play any music in his restaurant right now. So do you know anything about that, Mr. Layton or
Mr. O'Hara?
Mr. O'Hara?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I could send your constituent some information on that. I've got quite a bit of information back in my office.
Okay, well, if that's we'll talk about that right after, if that's okay, after we adjourn here, because sounds like something's not quite right there. So, okay. Anything else for the good of the order? Thank you, members, for your work. Good government all the time.